Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Prey Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 195 of Nerd Pride Radio. 195 years ago, 1822, in Charleston, South Carolina, was a man named Denmark Vesey. Vesey was a carpenter, also a slave. In about 1799, so before all this, Vesey had won a lottery as a slave, and used his lottery winnings to buy his own freedom, but, sadly, didn't have enough to buy his wife and his children out of slavery. So, after this, Vesey becomes an influential church leader, continues to associate with slaves, and eventually, supposedly, helped hatch a plan to free thousands of slaves in Charleston and then lead a slave revolt. Now, supposedly, that's what happened, but we don't know for sure because, in any event, he was captured, and a secret court established by the city of Charleston went ahead and tried him, found him guilty, and hanged him all as quickly as humanly possible. And so, therefore, Denmark Vesey was gone 195 years ago. There's your little bit of history for the day. All right, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me.
How are you doing today, Father?
I am awesome, Noah. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus. There's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. My co-host this week is Elizabeth Shue. And why? Because August's movie for Awesome in the 80s, our new movie review segment where I introduce my son Aiden to awesome, awesome movies that I loved in the 80s, and then he tells me why I'm an idiot. Our next one for the month of August is going to be Adventures in Babysitting. So if anyone wants to play along with this, if you want to watch the movie yourself, it is on Netflix right now. So if you have a Netflix subscription, you can go watch Adventures in Babysitting and then throw in your two cents before the episode comes up, or, you know, after it comes up. You can put in listener betrayal, you can send me some listener mail, whatever. But if you guys want to participate, Adventures in Babysitting is on Netflix right now. And again, this is a movie I loved in the 80s, so we'll see how it holds up. I'm a little nervous about this one, so we'll see what happens. Anyway, before I start into the main portion of the podcast, updates! All right. Last week, someone asked me when was the last time I cried. And I had said it was, because Aiden said that for him it was Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And I said, yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 got me, but maybe there was something else. I cry pretty easily. But I couldn't think of a specific instance. So this week, I noted all the times that I got all teary-eyed and wrote them down because, apparently, I get all misty a lot. So, I mean, and look, here's just three examples. These are just the three I wrote down as the week went on. One, I was flipping through my Facebook feed and there was a picture of a woman wearing a t-shirt. She was apparently a veteran because that's what her t-shirt tells us. And the t-shirt said, "Transgender veteran, I fought for your right to hate me." And there was something so powerful about that. I fought for your right to hate me. Something about that moved me a lot, and I got all misty about that one. And then after that, my wife showed me a video of an old cat named Grandpa Mason. You go ahead and go to YouTube, and you look up Grandpa Mason and watch these cat videos. And this is an old, very old feral cat who's been taken in and, you know, they've got his whole story about how he was slated to be euthanized, but they decided to give him another chance, and he's, you know, got adopted into some home, and he's continued to be a grumpy old cat, and he doesn't like people, he doesn't like getting anyone near him, blah blah blah. And then they introduce him to a bunch of young foster kittens who had been rescued, and it is just so sweet. Grandpa Mason just loves these kittens, tolerates anything they want to do, plays with them. He's learning how to play himself because apparently he's never done it before. And it was just cool. Just so cool and so, so moving. I mean, it's a bunch of cats, but you guys know how it gets. And so, yeah, that one got to me. And then the very last one was watching a clip of America's Got Talent. And I was watching it because Chris Hardwick was apparently a guest judge on this particular episode, and this 9-year-old girl comes out and she sings Girl on Fire, and her voice was just stunning. It was one of those performances. They do this on America's Got Talent all the time, one of these ones where it's the most unassuming person and suddenly they come alive with this voice that you would never have dreamed could come out of that kind of body and this kind of person. They just don't look the part. And she was amazing, absolutely stunning. And, you know, Chris Hardwick gave her the golden buzzer, and you know, she's in. And the part that really got to me was when they realized that she had done so well and she's getting a standing ovation and all of this, the little girl herself was so adorable. So she was so shocked and overwhelmed, but then also her parents sitting out in the audience. And that's the part that got right to my heart was watching her parents and just imagining, imagine what's like for them seeing their daughter and seeing her so happy and so successful and doing something that she loves. And yeah, makes you cry. So there you go. Apparently, I get weepy way more often than I thought. I'm a little softy is what I am. So anyway, that's it. Now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I put it down in my master list, and then the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, here's my master list. Actually, to be fair, before we jump right in, I gotta apologize. I feel a little off my game tonight. I feel I just a little distracted. I think I'm just tired. This weekend we went out to a place called Palisades State Park. It's up in South Dakota. And man, if you live close enough to make a trip to Palisades State Park, it's worth driving a few hours to get to even, because it's just a cute little park. We went there last year, just me and Lisa and the two youngest boys. I had a great time there. It is a tiny state park. Like, the hiking trails in it are all, you know, a quarter of a mile, a half a mile. I mean, that's really the longest you ever go. So they're not long, but the whole thing is set in this valley with these sheer cliff faces and these huge rock spires. And so everywhere you go, yeah, it's a short hike, but you can also choose to do a whole bunch of climbing if you want, and we certainly did. And the kids chose to do even more climbing than we did because they were way braver than us. And everyone had a really good time. We went out there this time, this weekend. We spent the night, and we went out with two of my wife's siblings, all of their kids, a cousin, and all of their kids. And so there were 20 of us out there this weekend, and we just had a good time. We even took a boat tour to see a cave that supposedly Jesse James had hidden in after a failed robbery attempt. And also then nearby the gorge, the Jesse James Gorge, Devil's Gulch, where Jesse James supposedly leaped his horse over that gulch in order to get away from the chasing posse. And,
quickly just butting in, my dad means to put a seriously hard, supposedly,
That's right, right. Supposedly. It's the whole, everything about this is, you know, our best guess is, well, according to witnesses, they went off in this direction. This could have been the only place that, well, it had to be. And so, it's a lot of guesswork, but man, this little town loves Jesse James, and they're going to keep repeating these legends because it's cool stuff. And the cave was super cool, and Devil's Gulch was really nifty, although then there's more of the park behind Devil's Gulch, and man, that was such a chore to walk to, and not nearly as pretty as the other stuff. Palisades was awesome. And so, anyway, we went out camping, and I maybe indulged a little much last night, and with all the hiking and the camp out and all of this, man, I'm exhausted today. But hey, it was all worth it. It's family fun, right? So hopefully it's not at your guys' expense. I will do my best to be on top of my game here. So bear with me. First up in the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, it's my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. All right. First up on the gaming table, I got two things today. One, Laser Riders. Laser Riders. I can't talk about this game enough. You guys have heard me ramble on about Laser Riders a million times. But I am telling you, this game is incredible. We just got our...
Beautiful.
Beautiful. We just got the Kickstarter version delivered last week. And it was phenomenal. I mean, the game is, all right, again, for those of you who haven't been listening all this time, Laser Riders is made by a couple people that I know, Tony and Nicole, and they've made other games that I love. Resistor, Kobolds, love these guys. And so they made Laser Riders that I got to playtest last year, and that's when I talked about it for the first time. But now I've got my finished version, and it's gorgeous. It has got this slick retro 80s packaging. It is drowning in 80s styling. It is.
And it has beautiful characters such as Laser Shark.
Laser Shark. That was Noah's character. Laser Shark and.
No, my character that I wanted to play as was Captain Cosmos.
Yeah, he really wanted to be Captain Cosmic. But unfortunately, Captain Cosmic is a bonus character. Although, technically, we didn't play with the powers, so you could have been Captain Cosmic and it would have been fine. But yeah. He played Laser Shark. I got to be the sheriff. Anyway, the whole point, it plays out like Tron Light Cycles. And so that's the feel of it. So that each of you just lay stuff out on the table. Each of you starts from one side of the table. And on your move, depending on what your speed and handling is at any particular moment, you lay out certain pieces to form your track to show the path that your rider is taking out across the table. And you're trying to pick up cosmic crystals. And as you go, your track keeps getting longer and longer behind you, like a game of Snake, maybe. And if you happen to run into anyone's trail, or if you hit the edge of the table, you've crashed. You start over, you pick up all your pieces, and you start back on your side of the table again.
But if someone runs into your line, the trail right before...
Right. Yeah, if someone runs into your line...
The piece it hit all goes away...
Right.
Clearing up the space.
Right. So if someone hits you, you don't die. You just lose part of your trail back behind that impact point. And so it, really cool. And with these boxes of pieces, you can actually play a really comprehensive game. I would have thought that there weren't enough pieces, not enough choices to make. Cause, you know, I have two straight pieces at each speed. I have a couple of turn pieces at each speed, and I kept thinking, yeah, but I'm going to keep wanting to go, you know, right in the middle. I'm going to be in third gear most of the time. Aren't I going to run out of three pieces? And no, it turns out you don't. The way the mechanics work with the crashes and the impacts, and there is allowance for if you do run out of the piece you want, no, don't worry. They got a way to handle that. It's not a big deal, and it plays so nicely. We wound up getting it once we got the rules down. It played so smoothly, and we had a blast. I mean, we really, it was just a cool thing. A really cool thing. And, you know, I won because, it's kind of unfair that you really need to know some physics, you need to understand a little bit of how momentum is going to work in this game. You can't just slam the brakes on. And so therefore, poor Eli and Noah, I think, were at a disadvantage, but don't worry, just a couple more games and, they're going to have me on this. So it was just so much fun. So if you don't own Laser Riders yet, and like I say, and this is just us playing, we haven't even thrown in the special powers yet. We haven't added in the new characters yet. So
whoa.
Can I
at least tell what I know about Captain Cosmos' special power?
All right. Tell them why Captain Cosmic's special power is so good. Go ahead.
Imagine you... So, whenever you capture a prism, you retoss out a neutral prism without seeing.
All right.
Imagine doing that, but with a laser piece of your current gear.
Yeah. What he's explaining is that Captain Cosmic's power, and he is so excited about this, is, you know, you lay out your path, and you know, as you drive around, you'll have this big curving path running around that you can use to block other people. But Captain Cosmic, at any point, he can expend his power to just pick up any piece of his track out of his box.
No.
And just
any
throw
piece
it.
Of the current gear you're in.
Oh, of the current gear. Anyway, he picks up a piece of track out of his own box and then just pitches it out on the table. And wherever it lands, oh, there's a barrier for you. And they've all got different powers that are all equally weird and cool. And it's just a lot of fun. So if you don't have Laser Riders yet, go online and search for it. There are places you can buy it. And it is not expensive, and you'll really, really, really like it. So we're taking it to Gen Con with us. We're going to play a ton, and we even entered into a Laser Riders event so that we can go play, hopefully, with Tony and Nicole there, so we can say hi to them, have them sign my box, the whole business. It'll be cool.
Wait, you're going to get an actual signature at Gen Con?
Well, of course I'm going to get a signature. Do you remember that they signed Resistor for me?
Yes.
Yeah, see, it's the same people, so they'll sign this one, too. They're so nice. So... anywho, did you have one more thing?
While you're at Gen Con, can you at least tell them that your youngest son thinks their game is amazing?
I will absolutely tell them how amazing you think this game is. All right.
Thank you.
You bet. The other thing that I have on the gaming table is someone pointed out, I think it was my brother, pointed out that all of the Dungeon and Dragon magazines from way back are online. Just, they're all, someone scanned them in, and you can download PDF copies of all of these old issues of Dungeon and Dragon. And if I was thinking, you know, I would have brought a link with me so I could tell you where to go find that yourself, but I won't. But go visit my forums, and my brother's got the link in there. And so I'm digging through these and playing with it, because my brother found it, and he was most excited because he found the issue that had the original Monsters of the Midway game, which is a game that allowed you to play football with monsters from Dungeons & Dragons, the original AD&D. And so you would use AD&D-style monsters, and you would throw them out on a football field. And we played this a ton as kids. When we got that issue of Dragon, oh, shit, we cut out all the pieces, set it all up. We played Monsters of the Midway. You know, they had a whole system for drafting and how many points you get, and it was so much fun. And so my brother found this. And, of course, you know, it's a PDF, so, hell yeah, he can just pull up the PDF, print up those pages again, cut it out, he gets to play that with his kids. So I think I'm going to do the same thing, because it was so much fun. Really enjoyed that game when we were kids. And so that was one of his inspirations for sharing this, is, oh, my God, I can't believe we found this. Same game designer, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, also had a print-and-play game in... another issue of Dragon called File 13, and it was the game of game design. And so you have all these weird... You okay?
No.
All right. You have all these weird games with different titles that you're trying to get to market. And so it has this huge board with all these different processes for getting the thing written and play tested and then getting the design done and putting it through production and the whole business. In my memory... I look back thinking, God, that seems like a really stupid game. It just feels stupid, doesn't it? And yet, we played that one a lot, and we really enjoyed it. I mean, we played that over and over again. So, there must have been something cool about it. But, anyway, I'm going to go back and print those up as well, and get those for my kids, because we just had a blast when we were their age, in fact. Yeah, in fact, I think we did those, when I was about Eli's age, and Kyle would have been your age, Noah. And that's back when we played those. So we'll get those out. But also while I was looking through the Dungeon magazine specifically, first off, old issues of Dungeon, oh my God, I am going to get myself lost in these things. Dungeon magazine was because Dragon magazine was the original role-playing game magazine that mostly focused on Dungeons and Dragons and provided lots of supplemental material for them way back in the 80s when I was collecting them. And then Dungeon magazine came out later and provided, each month 4, 5, 6 different adventures usually for Dungeons and Dragons, but it could have been for other games. Later, when Paizo took over, both magazines became very specifically just for D&D. But
Man, shouldn't they just mix them into one and make them Dungeons & Dragons magazine?
No, that was the whole point. You had Dungeon for adventures and Dragon for game materials, like new characters and new rules and new magic items and stuff like that.
Quickly?
Yes.
You guys didn't see it, but I pretended that my mind exploded.
Yes. Well, you know what? We do all sorts of really cool gestures over here, and they never get to see any of those. I'll tell them when I do air quotes, but usually they have no idea that we're gesticulating so wildly on this end. Anyway, in Dungeon Magazine, the thing I was most excited to find, and I found it right away, was issue 18 of the original Dungeon Magazine has an adventure in it called Talos Deep. And Talos Deep is the original mission where you get some decent level characters, like 6th level. At least when I ran it, they were 6th level. You get some decent level characters, 6th level or so, and they're headed into a situation where, and it's very clearly a side quest, and it's, oh, these townspeople, yeah, we've got some problems with goblins raiding our mines, and we really need your help, and can someone go down there and put a stop to this? And so the players head on down there, and they're a little cocky about it, a little swaggering, because when I played it with my guys, we were in Japan, we were over Christmas vacation, and so we all knew this was going to be a one-off. And so I sent them on a mission to, you know, they were all halflings connected to the royal house, and so they were all 6th level, and, you know, they created these characters specifically for this event. And they were on a special diplomatic mission to the Wizard's Tower because they needed to come up with something. And so I gave them this Wizard's Tower bit and the rumor about the evil wizard and the monsters that may be there. And so they thought that that's where they were headed. But really, the only reason I had them set all this up is so I could play this little side quest. So they thought this was going to be a little nothing side quest where, oh yeah, we'll go kick the goblins' butts. Because this was back during the original AD&D days when goblins didn't have levels. I mean, a goblin was really, at best, you know, 8 hit points. They were nothing. All right? So at 6th level, they're like, yeah, no problem. We'll go clear out your mines for you quick. This one, what is it going to take, an afternoon? Hold my coat. I'll do this. And so they head on down there thinking this is going to be a piece of cake. And this is an adventure written so that they get in there and the goblins have designed the environment themselves. They've set up traps. They use everything to the absolute best of their advantage. So they've got murder holes cut in the walls so they can fire arrows down on you, and there's no way you can get to them because they have like 98% cover. You know, they've got all sorts of pit traps and stuff that they dump on you, and when they need to make their escape, they head off through these little tunnels that they can get through just fine. Anybody else, you know, you're single file, you're stooped over, you're fighting at a whole bunch of penalties because the passages are so narrow. And it turns out that, you know, a band of, you know, 50 or so goblins, and these were all goblins with no levels, just like they were originally intended. And yet with these traps, my 6th level characters just barely made it out of this thing alive. And they were scared out of their minds. It was awesome. It was so awesome. I remember the adventure specifically said, you know, that once the alarms go off, it's drums, and the goblins will communicate with drums. And they said, you know, play this up. Make sure your players know that these drums are going off and that they won't stop, and that clearly this is the alarm system, so everyone knows that they're there. And so I did. I followed their suggestion, and so I would dum 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 dum. I mean, like a heartbeat, I kept doing it over and over and over. Anytime there was a pause in the action and they're discussing something, if I didn't have anything to do, I was just sitting over there making that deep, low drum noise over and over, and it drove them crazy. They were absolutely panicked. It was the first time I think that I've ever seen my players truly scared of what was going to happen. I mean, they'd been in tight situations before in other games. They'd done all sorts of stuff where, yeah, oh gosh, this is going to be really tough. But I think they always had a sense that yeah, but we're going to be all right. It'll all come out all right in the end. We will figure it out. There's always a way. And this time, since it was a one-off, since they knew this was the only time we were going to play these characters, since they knew, you know, they didn't have that sense anymore, and it was really cool to watch them be scared. It was a turning point for me as a game master because it showed me this really awesome effect of a horror style of role-playing, because that's really what this was. It's a horror movie. And they didn't know that's what they were getting into. And I've used that same sort of effect in other games later. I don't know if it's ever been quite that. Well, maybe once. Once. There was a time, years later, we were playing an online game. And I did that where it was just Kyle and my cousin Rob. And they were the only players in it, and they were off to, they were investigating some old abandoned house with, they didn't know what in it. It turned out to be a bar guest. And the bar guest was hiding up in the trees, laughing at them, mocking them, and swooping down on them. And, you know, it'd swoop down, take a swipe, and then disappear into the trees again. And it was another situation, kind of like the goblin tunnels, where I had them, the two of them, you know, they finally, in a panic, they decided that they were going to stand back to back and they were going to wave their weapons around. And it truly scared. You know, when you elicit real emotion in a game, fear, happiness, love, whatever, it's really exciting as a game master to know that you helped them get there. That is so cool. So anyway, that's Talos Deep. And now Talos Deep was originally written as Goblins in a Dungeon Magazine adventure. And I believe it was rewritten later as a kobold setup. So it's the exact same sort of thing, except it was kobolds instead of goblins. And it was done as an actual D&D module back in the day. But I don't remember the name of that, and I never did look at it or own it myself. I've only heard about it. So I'm sure there are other people listening who are yelling the name at their device right now because they know what it is. You guys go share that on the boards because I don't remember. But this is the original, and here it is. It's laid out for me now. The world is different because now I'm in Pathfinder, and so if I wanted to play it, got to do a lot of adapting. And, you know, we'd have to make a lot of changes to it and make Noah forget that he just heard me describe the whole thing right here. And, but I think it could be done.
I wasn't paying attention whatsoever.
Oh, see? Good kid. You're my...
Wink, wink. Just kidding.
Oh, I was just about to say that you're my favorite son and you went and ruined it. So,
I'm kidding. But... I actually did it. I promise you.
But as with Talos Deep, all of these dungeon magazines all have really great ideas. And yeah, most of the time it would be a lot of work to adapt them up to Pathfinder. But even without adapting a whole adventure, I mean, God, some of these, I'll just steal names out of them. I love finding cool names that I can go, oh my God.
Like what?
Like Master Three Balls. Yeah, see?
It actually came from one of those?
No, it came from actually, I was reading online, people were talking about different adventures that they had had and some of the most interesting characters they had met in a game. And one of them talked about a guy named, I think it was from a podcast. I think it was from Fear of the Boot. And on Fear of the Boot, one of them talked about meeting up with Master Three Balls. It's like, that's a name you don't forget. No one will ever forget that they met Master Three Balls. And so, I introduced a character in my game named Master Three Balls because that's a great name, and it worked out really well. And yeah, the kids never forget that character. And so, just flipping through these old dungeon adventures again, sometimes it's just a name and I will steal that and use it on somebody else. Sometimes it's a specific character or maybe the whole adventure hook or some kind of plot thing or whatever it is. I'm just going to mine this thing for ideas. And every once in a while, like Talos Deep, there are some of them that are so good, I'm going to look at them and decide, yeah, you know what? It's worth adapting this one. Or maybe it wouldn't be so tough to adapt this one. Because, again, Talos Deep is nothing but a bunch of first-level goblins, right? Because that was back when they had no levels. Well, now it's Pathfinder. I'll just make most of them just regular, standard, first-level warrior goblins. No big deal. And then you can play almost the exact same adventure because it's all about the traps and it's all about the terrain and the setup of these dungeons. And I think I can make a really good game out of that one. So there'd be some of those. So anyway, that's what I'm excited about this week is Laser Riders and finding all these back issues of Dungeon and Dragon and getting just one, relive a bunch of glory days, and two, get a whole bunch of new great ideas to throw back at my kids. So this will be awesome. That's it for the gaming table. Next up, fingertips.
Fingertips. Fingertips. Fingertips.
That's right. Fingertips is just where I clean up my master list and I throw these topics out without putting them into any particular category. I'm not doing a ton of research for them. I'm not developing them into real full-size segments, but I'll talk about them until I'm tired of talking about them. See, I'm just not on it today. Man, we got to get this back together. All right. First up, been having discussions about dementia lately, and dementia and Alzheimer's, and independently, my wife and son came to me and showed me this, and then also at the office, Yancey showed me the exact same thing, like all within 24 hours of each other. It was kind of cool that it came up independently like that, and it's something I've vaguely heard of before, but I've never seen the details. It is it's essentially a small village for dementia. And when I say small village, it's a giant building. It's in Denmark. And so, all of the, buildings, apartment complexes, all this kind of stuff is all built in this giant, ring. And then in the center of that ring is a miniature village, so that all the residents live in these apartments, these units that look like regular houses, but they're all built into this one big structure. And so all the residents there have dementia of some sort, and they all live in what look like normal houses, apartments. And then when they go out their front door, they're walking out into this huge, what is essentially a giant open courtyard, but, it's set up so it looks like they've got a main street and then they've got some side stuff and there's all sorts of activities there. And it just looks like a little village. And this is in Denmark, so I assume it looks like a little Danish village somewhere. And thus, as they walk down this main street, they're going to see familiar shops that, you know, you can stop and get groceries, go in and get a haircut. There's a movie theater. There's, you know, all sorts of different stuff that they can go do while they're in there. But again, it just looks like a village. It just looks like a place, you know, just any little downtown area. And so the residents there can all go out and about safely because, well, everyone who works at every one of these places, they're all employees of the complex, so they're all trained, they understand. So when you show up at the movie theater and you don't have any money to pay for anything, well, that's okay. We didn't expect you to remember to bring money. Good Lord. We're just glad you're here. Come on, let's get you in, get you some popcorn or whatever it is they eat in movies at Denmark. I have no idea if they eat popcorn. And then they go in and see their movie. Or when they go grocery shopping, they need to get groceries for their apartment, so they go in there, they get their cart, and they walk up and down the aisles, and they put whatever they need in the cart, we run them through checkout, send them home, right? And you don't have to worry about the money, don't have to worry about anything else. And if someone goes in there and they go nuts, and they start loading up the cart with a whole bunch of inappropriate stuff, well, don't worry. Once they get home, get it all put away, we've got someone who'll come in at night and clean that stuff out and make sure that they aren't wasting a whole bunch of food or that it's not. And it allows them to live what feels like a very normal life, but in a very safe environment. And it's just really cool. Really cool. And it would seem, you know, in a country like ours where our response to people with dementia is simply to put them in a nursing home, to put them somewhere where they can just be locked away and kept safe, and not provide this sort of richness of experience for living out their final days. That seems really odd and probably seems prohibitively expensive to us. And yet it ain't bad. It ain't bad. And it's such the quality of life it provides is amazing. And of course they're doing this in, you know, a place where the government is actually involved in providing healthcare and providing services to people. So, you know, they have that too. But, this is not the only one. There's another planned one in Australia going up, and Yancey, the article he found, he was showing me, I mean, the actual maps, the layouts of these places, and they were just incredible. I'm so, so intrigued by this. Additionally, they found out that for any dementia patient, it doesn't have to be in these villages, any dementia patient anywhere, what they've done is, even just in a regular nursing home, if you can get a picture of the front door of that person's house, the home where they lived before they came here. If you can get a picture of the front door of their house and make it a full life-size picture of that door, and then you go and put that picture of their door on the door to their room. So, you know, you get the whole full sheet door wrap, and now the door to their room looks exactly like the door to their old house. And suddenly, suddenly, patients know where they're going. They recognize that as home. Even, you know, even severe dementia patients will walk by and go, oh, this is my room. Got it. Because they recognize the door. That's the door that they went in for how many years? Decades, probably. They know that door. They know that door instinctively. And sure enough, you put that on their nursing home door and they recognize it. They're drawn to it. That's their place. I just thought, God, that's just a cool little trick. That's just one thing. That's just a door. one thing. Imagine if we actually paid attention. There's so much stuff that could be done for people who are suffering from dementia. So, which, again, hey, dementia runs in my family. This is not a joke for me. This may be something that I'm concerned about, you know, 20 years from now. So, you know, something I always worry about is dementia, is that, you know, got to keep the mind nimble, got to keep trying different stuff, learning new things, experiencing different things, because one of the other cool things is that the more learning you do, the slower dementia sets in on you. So the wider variety of experiences you're having, the more new things you try, the longer you can put off dementia. Even if it's, you know, even if it's in your cards, you can put it off longer simply by being active and engaged. They said learning a new language helps delay dementia by X number of years. And they said it doesn't matter when you learn that language. If you, you know, if you are bilingual and you learn that second language when you were much younger, it helps. But also, if you're 58 years old and decide you're going to pick up a new language, it has the exact same effect for you, and it helps. I'm like, oh, cool. You know what? I'm going to go get my, my language app out, and I'm going to start learning German again, because I need that just in case, right? So anyway, it's just, man, it's the little things with, you know, when you're worried about it. Like those little brain farts that you get, and suddenly you just can't remember Emma Watson's name. It's like you're in a conversation and you need to say something about her. And, you know, oh God, like she, you know, the Harry Potter, she played Hermione. You know her. She's, oh God. And for the life of me, and then I'm using Emma Watson as a specific example because I did. I forgot Emma Watson's name for a good 6 months. I like just couldn't pull it up. And when it happened to me, I was alone when I was thinking about it, and I thought, what was her name again? And I couldn't remember her name. And it bugged me. And so I didn't ask anybody. I didn't go look it up. I've told you about these before, that I'm not going to look it up. I'm going to make sure I get this. And I figured it out. And eventually I did. And then once it snapped to me, you know, like I would find myself, you know, you try and trick yourself into thinking about it that, oh, you remember that you wanted to get that. And so you try and think about it as fast as possible so I can't get caught in my usual traps. Because my problem was every time I thought of Emma Watson, for some reason, the name Emma Thompson comes to my head and I can never get to Watson. And so the trick would be, oh, I think about it. And then before I can say Thompson in my head, I just try and blurt out the name. And then eventually one time I got it and I'm like, oh, thank God, Emma Watson. All right, good. I'm not crazy yet. And now I've never forgotten her name again. So anyway, you know, you think about these things. And so, again, keep active, exercise regularly, be healthy, and exercise your head. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm trying to do. I haven't gotten the eat healthy, stay in shape, be active sort of thing going, but I can certainly exercise my mind. I'm working on that one. Okay. That's it for that segment. What's the next one on the list? There's dementia. Oh, all right. At my local dollar store, it's the Dollar Tree, maybe. Anyway, it says everything's a dollar right on the outside on the big sign. So this is one of those. It's not like the Dollar General, which is just the new five and dime. So they have dollar in their name, but it doesn't mean everything inside is a dollar. Although everything is nice multiples of dollars, which makes no sense to me at all, that everything in the Dollar General is, it's $1, it's $3, it's $8, and it's always an even dollar amount. But you guys are just going to throw tax on it, so that doesn't help me. But anyway, back to the Dollar Tree, which is the actual everything's a dollar store here in my town. And at the Dollar Tree, as we're walking around, you know, I noticed that all of the items in the store have their names and the descriptions on the packaging is all written in two different languages, which is not unusual. Most places in this country, you know, we've got large Hispanic populations across the United States, and therefore it's not unusual to see things that are bilingual in English and Spanish. And so, you know, as I'm looking at all this stuff, and because it doesn't matter why we were at the dollar store, but we were there. And so as I'm looking at stuff and I'm seeing two different languages on the packaging, it doesn't even register with me at first until suddenly I realize, wait, but that's not Spanish. That's French. Why? So my question is, why would the dollar store here in the middle of rural Nebraska, where we do have a significant Hispanic population in our area, and yet we have almost zero, an insignificant number of French-speaking people in this area. Why would it be in French? I have no idea. And if I had turned this into a real segment where I was going to rant about something or look for something interesting or whatever, I would have done some research into the company that owns the Dollar Tree, and then I would find out that, oh, their supplier is from New England somewhere where they get supplies, or, you know, or they deal with Quebec, or they – who knows what. All right, but for some reason, every single item in that store labeled in English and French, and that's it. There's no Spanish anywhere on it. So got to be a good reason for that. It's got to be connected to Montreal somehow, right? Right? It's got to be Quebec. It's got to be, who knows? But whatever company it is that supplies them, and then maybe this whole story is a giant chain that was originally based, you know, somewhere where having French on all your packaging would be important. But it was just weird to me. See, there, weird. I wrote it down. I brought it to you. Last one, have you seen the trailers for Seth MacFarlane's new TV show, The Orville? Have you? All right. I was really excited when the trailer first came on because Seth MacFarlane has done some stuff that I have found really funny. I still like American Dad, even though I don't care for Family Guy. I didn't care much for the Ted movies. I mean, they had some funny parts in them. But A Million Ways to Die in the West, I laughed my ass off at that one. But I think, again, that one gets extra points because I saw it in a theater with my dad and brother with me. It's the same reason I love Dodgeball so much, is I saw it in the theater with my dad and my brother. And that just makes the movie that much better. So A Million Ways to Die in the West, loved it because it was exactly the right sort of humor for the three of us to get together and watch a movie. Yeah. We brought some of the grandkids, whatever. They weren't important. It was me and my dad and my brother Kyle. And we watched a stupid movie and we laughed out loud and it was great. So anyway, my whole point is, this is a TV show. It's going to be by Seth MacFarlane. He's even going to be starring in it. And so, you know, optimistic that, hey, Seth MacFarlane does some stuff that I like. So therefore, this could be really good because it's clearly a farce, a parody of the Star Trek series. It looks a lot like Next Generation. I mean, even the uniforms, the styling of the ships, the graphics that they use, it all looks very Star Trek the Next Generation. And the premise is that the Orville is the ship in the fleet that all of the losers get sent to. And Seth MacFarlane being, you know, king of the dipshits, I suppose. And it looks like there's so much potential in here. And yet, as I watched this trailer bit for the show, I didn't laugh at any of it. Not a bit. And I think later as I was, Yancey found it. And so we watched it together. And I had that same feeling of, yeah, it's just not funny. It's just, I don't get it. And then finally I realized, I think what the problem is, because I love Galaxy Quest, right? Galaxy Quest is maybe my favorite movie of all time. I love Galaxy Quest. And what's the difference? And again, I haven't watched Orville. It hasn't been released yet that I know of, or if it has, it hasn't come to me. But I think the difference is both of them are mocking Star Trek, but Galaxy Quest mocked Star Trek while being absolutely head over heels in love with Star Trek. It was very clear that all of the poking holes in the format of the show and the stupid tropes that went into it over and over and over and all the weird things that happen on a show like that. They poked fun at all of that and they highlighted it and used it as plot points and yet very clearly loved Star Trek. Their heart was fully in it and they were completely committed. And in the end, even though it's a movie about a Star Trek-like TV show, the movie itself became ultimately very much a Star Trek story with all the tropes worked in and embraced them fully. And it was gorgeous. Whereas Seth MacFarlane, I feel like he likes, I'm pretty sure Seth MacFarlane is a huge Star Trek fan. I mean, he's had, how many Star Trek jokes have gone into his previous TV show cartoons. How many cast members from Star Trek have appeared on his shows? I mean, clearly he's a fan, and yet, at least in the trailer for The Orville, it just, the heart wasn't in it. It felt like he was afraid to commit to being, you know, to make fun of it and yet also embrace it at the same time. That, cause that, Galaxy Quest had heart, people. You gotta, if you haven't seen Galaxy Quest, well, maybe other people don't react to it the same way I do. I love that movie. But the Orville, from what they're willing to show us in the preview, doesn't have that heart. It doesn't, it's just straight up mocking. It's just making fun of it without that same, embracing of everything that it stood for and being us, because the Orville, if done well, would be a Star Trek show that makes fun of Star Trek shows. But instead, it's just a show that makes fun of it. It's not, anyway, it just doesn't feel like it's got, I don't think I'm going to like it. But if I have the opportunity, I absolutely will watch the first episode or two just to see, because I would hate to judge something just from a trailer and find out I was wrong. But I mean, I'll give it a shot. But, oh man, my hopes are not high on this. Yeah, really. Okay, that's it. We're done with the Meticulously Pod portion of this podcast, which means it's now down to the pod. Yeah, no, we go on way too long. O-matic! Where's R2? We've lost R2. This is tragic.
Every day we bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-matic bubble.
And what does R2 do? You're halfway.
And he rolls up random topics for us.
That's right.
Hot dog.
Hot dog. That, well, he got halfway through it. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something?
Was I supposed to butt in there?
No, I was pausing to see if you would ask. I you know, where do these topics come from, you ask? And then,
where?
And then I look at you and you go, yeah, where? Or something like that. But you didn't have to. So anyway, that's where you guys come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email or on Facebook or Twitter or a private message on my forums. That's the best place to do it. All of those. I'll add them to my Pod-O-matic list. And then Pod-O-matic is about whatever you want it to be. And our first number that Noah so kindly rolled up for us is number 41. And come on, I have the list. It's here, I swear. There we go. All right. Number 41 is from... It's from Eliahad. Oh, I know that guy. He's cool. Whoa. Apparently, if you don't have numlock on, and then you hit the one button, everything just shoots way off to the right. Let's get that numlock button on. Man, I'm bad at this game. All right. Eliahad says, did you see that? Seriously, that was awesome. If Aiden is there, berate him for distracting you from seeing the awesome. If he isn't, no, hey, whoa. Wait a minute. No, Aiden's not here. Noah. Seriously, can you at least turn the game off? You distracted me and I didn't see what that was.
I'm sorry, what?
Well, Eli said, did you see that? And I missed it because you over here have your stupid game on and you distracted me. No.
What?
You're now the
set. Oh, it was talking about our wavelengths. Yeah. I get it.
No. You're my second favorite son now. Sorry.
Hey!
Sorry. That's just the way it works.
You know I'm your most favorite son. Maybe.
So,
I don't know.
It says, if he isn't there, describe the awesomeness anyway, like you were actually there. No one should feel left out from this. No. No, I didn't see a thing because of Noah. All right. Nice try blaming Aiden, though. Aiden's innocent in this one. 76. And 76 is from... Dun, dun, dun. There it is. 76 is from Stan. Hey, Stan. Stan says, do you believe in love at first sight? Absolutely not. No. No, I do believe in absolute infatuation at first sight. I believe...
50 chance absolutely not.
I think that you can see someone and be absolutely infatuated with them. Something about them in their style, in their appearance, in their whatever the first thing is that you know about them. I certainly believe that you can be completely infatuated with somebody. And if you follow up on that infatuation and, you know, you decide that, wow, that person really intrigues me. I don't know what it is about them. I feel drawn to them. I have to get to know them. And then you go and you meet them. And if you're lucky, it turns out that they really are as interesting and cool as you thought they were. And maybe you guys are compatible and maybe it turns into love. And then later on, you're going to interpret that as, oh, clearly it was love at first sight. I knew the moment I saw her, there was just something there. Except that, you know what? I believe love is a lot deeper than that. I believe love requires a lot more than just, locking eyes for the first time. So, but yes, oh, certainly there's infatuation. Certainly there is lust. There's all sorts of emotions that might draw two people together. And hopefully once they get to know each other, it turns into love. It turns into something deeper and more meaningful. But no, not love at first sight. Does that make me too cynical? I don't think so.
No.
26. 26 is... there it is. 26 is from Kyle. Oh, finally you showed up on this list, Kyle. Yeah, maybe you should send in some more entries because you should really be dominating more than this. Kyle says, oh my God, have you heard about the Spotify? I've got a premium family account and like it's got every song on it, like everything. Except Lucky Seven's cover of Faithfully, but pretty much everything else. How often do you listen to music? I don't know. I mean, Lord knows I'm a living, breathing human being, so I love music, as the majority of people do. We enjoy listening to music. I do not just specifically sit down and listen to music very often. I mean, when I'm in the car, it's usually podcasts, you know? But if I'm in the car with my family, yeah, it's usually music. Usually it's my wife's playlist, but, you know, I have my own stuff as well that I enjoy. And there have been times when, if I'm in the office is a hard time to listen to podcasts because I can't concentrate on two things at once. So a lot of times I'll have my playlist on at the office and there'll just be background music going, but, it comes in waves. I haven't done that for a few months. So I haven't specifically gone out of my way to just listen to a bunch of my own music for a while, which is a shame. I should do more of that. I should remember to, I mean, just, you know, whether it's on my phone or it's on iTunes or it's on whatever, yeah, I should just remember to kick up some songs while I'm at work because I do so enjoy music. So anyway, but no, not often. And I've not even ever looked at Spotify. So I wouldn't even know. 31. 31 is from Mrs. Darks. Sarah Beth asks. Oh, it's a bedwetter behead.
Okay. I'm listening.
Robert Downey Jr. You know who that is?
No.
That's Iron Man. Oh. So Robert Downey Jr., the guy who plays Iron Man.
Tony Stark.
No. Tom Hiddleston. You know who Tom Hiddleston is?
No.
The guy who plays Loki.
Okay.
Or Ryan Reynolds. You know who Ryan Reynolds is?
No.
Ah, it's Deadpool. All right. So from those three, Robert Downey Jr., Tom Hiddleston, Ryan Reynolds. Do you have a bedwetter behead for that? Do you have
no.
an answer? All right. The 11-year-old does not care to talk about the bedwetter behead this time. This one I think is pretty easy for me. Maybe it's not so easy. Because do I want to bed Deadpool or do I want to marry him? Because Ryan Reynolds seems like a really fun guy. So he would certainly be great for the bed portion of this, but he might also be good for the wed portion. I mean, I could, you know, could you see yourself hanging out with Ryan Reynolds every day for the rest of your life? I mean, he is pretty cool, right? Now, you know, Ryan Reynolds is a great actor in that he plays a really good Ryan Reynolds. Which is to say he plays a really good Van Wilder, and I think Deadpool is the best Van Wilder he ever played. And I love Ryan Reynolds. I think he's awesome. He's got a great sense of humor. He is really cool and really fun, but, you know, I'm not saying he's got a whole lot of range, but so what? You don't need to. I mean, there's lots of actors who, you know, like Kristen Stewart. Kristen Stewart plays a really great Kristen Stewart, right? All right, see? But it doesn't, not a lot of range, but, you know, you just have to have the right parts to match that particular talent. That's all it means. And like I say, man, Ryan Reynolds hit the jackpot with Deadpool. Although, hit the jackpot, he worked his ass off to get Deadpool made and get himself in that role. And so, you know, his work paid off. But that's not the point. The point is I have to do a bedwetter behead with these three. And Robert Downey Jr., I'm going to kill. Yeah, I get that he's good looking. I get that he's, there's all sorts of positives to Robert Downey Jr., but I also think he's a cocky ass and I don't care much for him. And he dumped a slushie on Anthony Michael Hall back in Weird Science, and I've never forgiven him for that. So Robert Downey Jr. is out. We will certainly behead him. And then between Hiddleston and Ryan Reynolds, oh man, it is a toss-up, an absolute toss-up. I could go either way on this one and be perfectly happy. But I think I'm going to marry Hiddleston and bed Ryan Reynolds. I think that's going to be my ultimate pick. Because, I mean, Ryan Reynolds seems, you know, he seems fun. At least his personality he puts out for the media. He seems like a lot of fun. And I don't know, Hiddleston feels a little more serious for the marrying portion of this. But I, you know what? If you turn those two around, it would be just fine for me the other way too. So I don't care either way. 79. All right, R2, what do we got? 79 is, there it is. It's from Kyle again. And Kyle says, what work of fiction, game, adventure, story have you created that you are most proud of? Work of fiction, game, adventure, story. See, because I would have to say, honestly, most proud of. Man, I've got so much to choose from. Because instant game comes to mind as my work that I am most proud of, but it's not really a work of fiction. It's just, it's game rules that help you create works of fiction without creating them itself. So aside from that, maybe my game Pariah, which is, you know, kids with superpowers being held in a government facility and they need to escape. I love Pariah. I've played it a couple times now, and I really love Pariah. Hell, it was written and published, so, you know, that's pretty cool too, right? But Pariah's a great story, I think. But I also think Genre Clash and what was the other? BFF. Those two as just fudge story systems, simple game. No, you know, oh man, but also Scout Camp Horror. Those three all go together for me. Man, I don't know. All right, you know what? No. As much as I love all of those, God, I can't believe you're going to make me choose. The work of fiction I am most proud of is, it's a toss-up. It's either Scout Camp Horror or Mostly Dead. Scout Camp Horror was running my older kids through an adventure where there are scouts at camp and camp becomes flooded and then there's this dimension hopping puzzle and it's a big horror story and eventually they wind up crashing a car and killing themselves to save the world, and it was really cool. Which was not the solution I had laid out for them. It was not like I wrote an adventure that decided that they were all going to have to sacrifice themselves for the greater good of humanity. That's just how it played out and the way they chose to deal with the situation they were presented with. But I love that one, but I also love Mostly Dead. Mostly Dead was the zombie story that I ran last year for Eli's birthday, and that one was really super cool too. So torn between these two. All right, I'm going to go with the Scout Camp Horror. I'm going to go with that one. That's my favorite. That's the one I'm most proud of. The one I most wish I could transform into a more presentable state to give to the world, because I really, really liked playing that one. And man, I should sit down to that. So anyway, good question. 72. 72 is going to be our last one. It's from Kyle. Kyle says, oh, it's a bedwetter behead. At least it's something easy, right? Come on, Kyle, be easy. First, an inflatable mattress with a slow leak and a brown stain of unknown origin that wraps around the middle to both sides. Ugh. Okay.
What was that? Can I quickly read this? Pause it.
Well, I think... Oh, wait. I think this is going to be really, really simple. No, it's really complex. Let me read this one. Your three choices are an inflatable mattress with a slow leak and a brown stain of unknown origin that wraps around the middle to both sides. All right. That's pretty gross. Modern-day Christina Ricci dressed in her Wednesday Addams outfit. Or... Christina Ricci is an actress who has been in some really weird and quirky stuff in her career. And also, she played the role of Wednesday Addams in the Addams Family when she was much younger. Then my third choice is Nearly Headless Nick. All right. For this...
Well...
What?
I have to... I'm going to assume you were talking about the living Nearly Headless Nick.
Well, no, the ghost.
Okay. Well, to break the laws of physics, I'm going to kill him.
Are ya?
Yes! Because why wouldn't you break the laws of physics, Dad?
Okay, that's fine. So you kill Nearly Headless Nick. Are you going to marry Christina Ricci because she's, you know, like a living human female? And then you have to make out with the mattress?
No, I have to bed the mattress.
Bed! Oh my God, you're right. Sorry. You know what? Kyle just gave us a bed. Wednesday Addams, the wed. And Nearly Headless Nick, the behead. He's so damn clever.
Oh my goodness!
See?
I do. Oh
Noah hit on
goodness.
It by accident. Thank God you were here.
I accidentally hit that.
So, yeah, well, imagine if I had answered this question honestly and never once figured out that that's what he was doing. I would have been really embarrassed. So, but to still answer the question truthfully, we're going to throw a bone to Nearly Headless Nick and we'll bed him because he's so needy and desperate for attention. I mean, come on, we'll give him something. Kill the stupid mattress because that thing's disgusting. And why wouldn't you marry Christina Ricci? She seems really cool. She's beautiful. She's got lots of money. I can handle that. Whether or not she's wearing the Wednesday Addams outfit or not doesn't make it. Although, have you seen Adult Wednesday Addams? If you haven't watched Adult Wednesday Addams, go out to YouTube and find it. She was forced to take the videos down, but there's other people that host them. And they're really cute and clever. It's just Wednesday Addams as an adult. And they're just adorable little videos. Very morbid, very Wednesday Addams. It's very cool. So you should check those out. And then that's it. That is the end of the Podomatic. So let's turn it over to GLaDOS, and we'll get a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was just Weezer's in the Garage and Fingertips by They Might Be Giants, who I'm going to see in concert in just 2 short weeks. I'm so excited. All right. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them on my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, this podcast is, for now at least, a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. Angry Geeks Versus, Me Like Trivia, and Nerd Pride Radio itself. Quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people.
Why
although,
at least for now?
Well, that I'm glad you asked that question, young man. Angry Geeks Versus is in their last season, and so I think they're going to be done... did he say November? Oh, man, it's got to be sooner than that. I can't remember. Anyway, they are wrapping up. This will be their last season. So when they get to the end of this particular run, they're going to be closing up shop. And Me Like Trivia, haven't had a new episode in about 6 months because they're very busy people. They're very involved. And those episodes take some work to get put together. And so I don't know if we really have much of a network left, but we'll see how it goes. Yeah, who knows? Maybe some other friends of mine will come up with some podcasts and we'll have some new entries here. And maybe we won't. So we'll find out. Where's the rest of my credits? There they are. If you want to do something to help out Nerd Pride Radio, then subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use and write us a nice review. Give us 5 stars. That sort of stuff makes a big difference. But if you want to really help us out, please recommend this podcast to your friends because you're enjoying it. So why not spread the word and let other people enjoy it as well? Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I am always looking for your listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all that grueling research. My contact information, Mike at Nerd Pride Radio, at Nerd Pride Radio on Twitter, Facebook.com/Nerd Pride Radio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up, send me a message, we will hang out together and become best friends in the world. We will have fun. And now it's time for Listener Betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out onto the forums on Facebook, and I tell everybody, hey, I am recording anything you want to post up. I will read it off at the end of the podcast, which is exactly what I'm doing right now. I am going to start off on my website at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. And in this particular thread, I've got one reply, and it's from Kaz. And Kaz says, so, Henry is worried about my going on this trip. Mike, can you say something encouraging for him? Okay, Kaz is going with us to Gen Con. He's going to ride. We're going to pick him up on the way. And Henry is his son. And Henry is concerned about his dad going on this trip. What are you worried about, Henry?
Henry, my tips about worrying. Don't.
It's not.
Absolutely do not.
It's not.
It's okay.
It's not as simple as that, but...
My dad hasn't died for like 5 years now.
You're not helping.
It's okay.
He's making jokes. You're not helping. The kid is worried about his dad. His dad is going away for 4 days, and so he's rightfully concerned. I mean, is dad going to have everything he needs? Is he going to have a good time? Is he going to come back okay? Obviously, you're going to worry about that stuff. So, Henry, my friend, buddy, pal, you... he's going to be...
Steven, am I doing it right?
No, you're so completely wrong. Henry, your dad is going to be awesome. He is going to have such a great time, all right? And here's the thing. When we go to Gen Con, and it's not even that far of a drive for him, all right? He's going to go, and we have got a hotel. I've been there. We're staying at the same hotel I did a while back, and that hotel is a nice close walk to the convention, and he's going to have a bunch of friends around him all the time. We'll keep him safe. Trust me. Nothing's going to, like anything could happen to your dad anyway. But here's the deal, kid. When he comes back, like I said, he's going to go off. He's going to have a great time. All right. And he is going to call you every night. So it's not even like you're going to get so tired of talking to him. You're going to wish he would quit calling. All right. But he will call you every night. He'll talk to you and your mom and your brother. And it'll be awesome because he's your dad and he's cool. All right. And then when he comes home, he's going to come home with so much cool stuff and so many cool stories. The things we find there, all the coolest games, we meet cool people, we do awesome things, and then we bring that back home to our families and our friends, and we share. And it's going to be a good time. Seriously. Seriously, dude. He's going to be safe. He's going to have a great time. He's going to call you every night. That's all you need, right? Your dad loves you. You know that. All right. That's it. That's all I've got on my my forums. So I'm going to head on over to Facebook, and on Facebook I have a few responses. The first one is from Nelly, and Nelly says, hey, I made it in. Hope you're having a great weekend. I did. And what are some of your travel essentials for going to and home from Gen Con? Travel essentials. In my experience so far, it is mostly the stuff, because I have my standard packing list for any trip I'm going to take. I mean, you know, you've got the sundries and the clothes, and boy, make sure you've got your deodorant and comfortable shoes for walking and that kind of stuff. That's all pretty basic. Look, comfortable shoes, that's a big one, because you're going to be walking a lot. But absolutely essential for being there is having a backpack and in that backpack having pencil and paper and dice, because, God, you're going to need those all the time. But for the ride, I mean, if we're just talking about going back and forth, what's my usual travel stuff? Mostly good company. Man, every experience at the con, whether it's going, getting there, getting home, being at the con, good company is essential, especially when you're on the road, man. You need somebody to talk to, keep you awake, keep you engaged and excited. But let's see, travel essentials. Oh, I don't know. It's mostly, look, we pick up snacks along the road. And last year I brought my snack mix that we have. I think that was last year, or was that the year before? I can't remember. Maybe it was the year before with Aiden. And brought along our trail mix that we usually make up, which is huge and complicated and has all sorts of stuff in it. And it's pretty good. Although, man, it's an awful lot for just, we're going to have 8 people this time. Maybe we'll do it again. Maybe we won't. We'll see. This year, since we're going to go see the They Might Be Giants concert, Dave has already asked if it's okay if he makes up a big They Might Be Giants playlist for us to listen to on the way there and get ourselves pumped and in the mood for the concert. So that'll be pretty cool. But I don't know what else. Like I say, when I go on a big long road trip, I don't really think much about the trip itself, because, like I say, I know I'm going to have Aiden and Jacob and Dave and eventually Kaz to talk to along the way. So all that is cool. But it's mostly about what I'm going to need while I'm there. And that is, again, comfortable shoes, deodorant, backpack, pencil, paper, dice. And then, of course, all of us are plotting out what games we're bringing with us just so we can play games while we're there. And so we're coordinating a list of making sure that everything everyone owns that either we just really enjoy or we want to share something new with somebody or whatever, we're bringing it all along, and it's going to be really awesome. So anyway, next up is Sarah Beth. And Sarah Beth says, "Hi, Mike. Thanks for being awesome." Hey, thank you. I try.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome. That's right. I'm glad you think so, and I am glad to be here. I'm just glad people listen and appreciate it. So very cool. And then James follows up with, "How awesome is Mike Jones? So awesome, right?"
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I'll take that. And then last of all, Sarah Beth then replies to him and says, "Oh my God, so awesome. Aw, see, we end this show on a bunch of love. You guys are great." So that's where we're going to wrap it up. Thank you, Noah, for being here. Say goodnight to everybody.
Goodnight.
Aiden just walked in, and he's in the background. Say goodnight, Aiden.
Goodnight, everybody.
Say goodnight, R2. Love you guys. I'll be here next week.
See ya.